Interview with Olga Robshaw on the 6th of March 1992.
Oh, my name is Olga Robshaw. I live at 124 Tuckwell Road, Castle Hill. I was born on the 8th of November 1924. My nationality is Australian and I am widowed. I have three children and four stepchildren.
First of all, I'll just ask you a few background questions. What kind of work did your father do?
My father actually worked at Riverston Meatworks, but he had to retire early because he was suffering from... He was a World War One man and he was gassed in France and he served at Gallipoli, so he had to retire early because of... Disabilities,
right.
and then he conducted a poultry farm, a small poultry farm,
in Schofields.
He had a 25-acre property in Schofields.
Mm-hmm. So, were you born in Schofields?
I was born at Riverston. I attended Schofields Public School and went to high schools in Parramatta.
Did you travel by train?
Travelled by train, and in those days the train travel, of course, was confined to steam trains and service was fairly limited, and in the afternoons we had to catch a train to Blacktown and we had to wait there for an hour, and it was very boring actually because there was very little at Blacktown, and then we had to wait an hour for a train that we called Stumpy, which was a very limited steam train addition, and that would take us from Blacktown along the Richmond line. So services were very limited.
Mm-hmm. And when you went to primary school, did you walk to school there?
No, I went to school. We lived several miles away, and my brother used to ride his bike, but when I was small I was taken to school by buggy.
Oh, were you?
Yes, a square-rigged buggy, and there were about 8 or 9 small children were taken by buggy to school and taken home by buggy in the afternoon. But as I got up older, I used to ride my bicycle to school.
Was that buggy like a taxi service?
It was a kind of a taxi service. There was an elderly gentleman that drove his horse and he used to pick the children up. I don't know what fee my parents paid, but that was the way that I got to school.
And so your earliest memories of living there in your childhood, how would you describe the surrounds, the environment?
Well, it was very open space. We had a creek running through our property. There was bush actually all around. There was an area called Cow Flat where there were some fairly poor kind of residence. There's people who were on a very low budget, sort of lived in, some of them were shacks and all that. That wasn't on our side. But my brother and I, we and his friends, there weren't any girls around, we used to spend our time catching, trapping birds and riding horses and fishing in the lagoons and sailing canoes in the creeks. And of course they were a lot clearer in those days, but there was never any worry about roaming. You could roam at will and there was never a threat to security. Mm. And as we got older, I used to travel by train into Sydney eventually after I finished at high school. And you could travel home by train and walk up our lonely hill, and never any problems on the train. So I think we had it a lot easier than perhaps the children of today,
yes,
who can't enjoy that kind of freedom.
So that's one thing you'd say has changed with the population.
Yes, there's no threat to children. We used to ride our bikes when we were teenagers to CWA younger set dances and so on, and nobody ever worried about walking late at night or travelling on the train late at night or riding your bikes anywhere. There was just no threat. And that, I think, is one of the biggest changes that I notice now. I think we were much more fortunate than possibly our grandchildren.
You had much more freedom.
Much more freedom.
And what sort of house did you live in?
Well, we had a 25-acre property, and we had a fairly big house with verandas all around. We had our own tennis court, and we had horses to ride. So we had a very good life, actually. And there was an area which my father had cleared in the creek, so we had also had our own kind of private swimming pool.
Lovely.
Which was clear. So we had a very free and easy, very good life, despite the fact that my father was suffering from various disabilities and his work capacity was limited.
And what did your mother do? Did she work at all?
Oh, no, my mother didn't work, no. Well, we had 25-acre property. We had a car. I suppose we had a pretty good lifestyle. And we used to... My mother was... actually, she'd been... her sister had been educated to marry a rich man when he didn't. Her father, who was very well situated, decided that she was going to get a practical education. So she was sent after her high school had finished, schooling had finished, to a technical college to learn the practical arts of keeping a house. So she was very good at sewing and a very good cook, and she liked preserving and so on. She belonged to the P&C and various other things. That was at Schofields, my mother, yes. And but of course we had the tennis court, and that was a big social centre, and my parents encouraged, we had a piano, and my parents encouraged us to bring our friends home, so there was always stacks of people around.
And did your mother do all her own cooking and preserving and making jams?
Yes, my mother did that.
Would she have had electrical appliances in those days?
Yeah, well, we had a wood stove to start with when I was smaller. Then when the electricity came to Riverston, we had the electricity connected, and I remember my brother and I competing for the honour of switching on the electricity. And before that, we had ice chests. And... but of course when the electricity came, we got an electric stove and we got an electric refrigerator. And
when would that have been? In the...
Oh, that would have been in the early, the mid-30s, I suppose.
Okay.
But I remember being younger, we thought it was tremendous having a refrigerator that you could make ice cream, or their mother could make ice cream.
And what about washing machines?
Oh, well, I mean, earlier, you know, you had coppers. I can remember in times of drought, that was before the water supply was connected. My brother and I, who were quite small, used to think it was a lot of fun, but I can remember my father hitching up a horse to a dray and taking the copper and all the rest down to the creek so the washing could be done in the creek, and a tin tub used to be taken down, and we used to get bathed down there, but it was just to utilise, you know, when water was very short. But of course when the water was connected, you know, a permanent water supply, that was another problem out of the way. But we thought it was fun, no doubt my mother thought it was a pain.
And how did your mother organise her shopping?
Well, we had a car, and the big treat used to be we used to go down, my father would drive down to Parramatta on a Friday night, and we'd do our shopping at Friday night, and then invariably we'd go to the Roxy, or one of that was the main picture theatre there, and we'd see a movie on the Friday night, so that was shopping night and picture night. So that was the end of the week treat.
Special treat. And did your mother have to go into Sydney very much for shopping?
I can remember my father driving into town. I mean, I can remember parking the car in George Street, you know, and Well, that was when my brother and I discovered that there was Father Christmas was really our parents, because we went poking in, around in some parcels that were in the car while they were shopping, and we discovered what our Christmas presents were going to be. So I clearly remember the car being parked in George Street, and there didn't seem to be a great deal of traffic around. But my father believed that if you had a car, you travelled anywhere and everywhere, and we used to go camping, doing all sorts of things.
Did
but people didn't go camping in those days. But if there was a raid, we went down it.
Progressive thought. Mm. And did you go camping in the school holidays?
Yes, well, we used to... my father used to establish camp. We used to go to Avalon and Dee and places like that when people didn't really go camping. We had very good set-up. And we used to take our supplies down, and he even used to take some chooks down and tether them in the bush, you know, around there. So we had fresh poultry on the hoof whenever. So we'd spend about 6 weeks camping down there, and my father would come down at weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So usually there were a couple of friends with us and perhaps some other relatives, but we really had a very good childhood.
Sounds as though you enjoyed your childhood.
Oh, yes, we did.
What did you do for recreation apart from that?
Tennis. tennis and swimming and riding bikes. My brother and I had a tandem bicycle, and we used to... or one of my other friends, we used to ride to a lot of round robin tennis things and
around the
play a lot
area.
Of yes, mm-hmm. and play a lot of competition tennis mm-hmm. and they used to be small dances and so on there. There was always something to do.
Plenty of entertainment.
Plenty of entertainment. Mm-hmm. Well, we made our own.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And sing songs around the piano and so on.
And what about the churches in the area? Did they play a big role in the community?
They were very small, actually. The there was a small very small Anglican church in Schofields, and another more or less a gospel type of school. I went to Sunday school there because there wasn't a Church of England Sunday school. And then we used to go to church, to the Anglican church, usually on Sunday nights at Riverston.
Mm-hmm.
But very little in our area in the way of church service. You had to go to Riverston, which was only several miles away.
And did your mother actually do the shopping locally, or
we used to go in the car. There was a small shop at Schofields, you know, general shop and a produce store, but we used to go and do our main shopping at McElroy's, I think it was, in Parramatta.
Oh, that was the Friday night.
That was the Friday special. Night excursion, mm-hmm. yes.
And what about health services in the area?
Oh, well, there was a local doctor. There was a small... My brother was born in a small nursing home at Riverston. I was born at Riverston. The nearest hospitals were Windsor, which was very, very limited kind of hospital, and the other hospital was at Parramatta.
Mm-hmm.
So apart from the local doctors, the area was poorly served with health services.
So in an emergency, it was a fair trip to the hospital?
Well, I mean, it was by whatever transport you had to either Riverston to the local doctor, or to Windsor to the hospital, or to Parramatta.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any emergencies as children that you remember?
No, not really. No, we were a pretty healthy lot.
Mm-hmm.
But my father was being treated for war disabilities. He used to have to go down to Royal North Shore. He'd go down by train. And he'd go down there once a week, by train to Royal North Shore Hospital.
It's a long trip.
well, you didn't think anything of it in those days.
You just accepted
the
fact you
had
to travel.
If you don't have a facility, you travel to the nearest facility.
Yes.
But I think that people's expectations these days on health services are too great, particularly seeing that, I was vice chairman of Blacktown Hospital Board for a number of years.
Were you?
Sort of tied up with a lot with health services mm-hmm. for many years. And I think that some people overutilise health services. Their expectations are too great.
Mm. So that's changed then, hasn't it, from the old days?
Oh, yes, but if something's there and it's free.
Yes. People will.
If you've got to pay for it, that's right. Mm. If you've got to pay for something, people don't always value it.
That's right. Mm. And when you left school, did you go on to any sort of tertiary education or courses?
Well, at that time we had a bit of a financial crisis. I did get a bursary when I went to primary school. I did get a very good pass, mm-hmm. state pass. And I went to Parramatta High School, but unfortunately my father's health had really broken down then, and I had an opportunity of becoming a teacher, but you know, family finances, you don't get the financial assistance, mm. and parents have to put up a bond. In those days, and that was completely. My father was a very proud man, and he'd utilised a lot of the money that he had rather than depending on services that might have been available. Mm. So our funds were a very low ebb. Mm. Subsequent to that, he was granted a service pension, but it was too late for me. But I'd won a scholarship to, instead of becoming a teacher, I won a scholarship to Metropolitan Business College, so I did secretarial, you know, general course through that.
Mm-hmm. Shorthand and typing.
Yes, bookkeeping and so on. Yeah. But that wasn't really what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But subsequently worked in a stockbroker's office and...
This was in Sydney, was it?
In Sydney, mm-hmm. yes. And then I was married when I was 18. And
so what year would that have been?
That's 50 years ago, so that's
1942.
Mm. And I went to live in Ballarat for a year and then came back. I had a young son. And... My first husband, he was in the Air Force, and he came back when peace was declared with in Europe. Peace was declared in Europe, and then he had to go up and do some more service in the islands. We subsequently bought some land at Blacktown and built a house there. Meantime, we were living with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
In the intervening period, I had another son. I've had three sons by that first marriage. Well, two sons and then twins, but I lost my little girl when she was 12 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And my first husband and I bought the Advocate, and I used to assist on the Advocate, and then our marriage broke up and I took over the Advocate and ran it for until 1976. That was 1953, 1976, and meantime I had, you know, three small children
yeah.
too.
Mm.
And
you must have been very busy. Did you rely on your parents at all?
Well, my parents in the meantime had, the property was too much for my father, and they bought one of my blocks of land that I had at Blacktown, and they built a place next to me.
Oh, so you had that family support?
Yes,
there.
I had that family support.
Mm.
My father, in the meantime, after I took over the Advocate, became editor of the Advocate, I teamed up with a couple of other people and we started our own printing works. So we used to print the Advocate locally.
And did you print other newspapers as well? Or?
No, just the Advocate, and we did job printing and all the rest. Mm. So, you know, you'd become a dab hand at inserting and feeding machines and all sorts of things, and even delivering the papers.
Mm. And so did that sort of work satisfy you more than just doing secretarial work?
Yes. I mean, yes, well, you're dealing with people.
Mm.
And I've always found people very interesting.
Mm.
And gives you an opportunity to be nosy and ask questions, just the same as you're too.
Yes, that's right. And did you, how did you find it bringing up the three children while you were working? Did they get themselves to school and so forth?
Or? Oh, no. Well, you see, my mother lived next door, and she used to, you have very big demands on your time because you'd be attending council meetings and doing all sorts of things. Anything could happen. I only had a small start. And you become involved in a lot of things. When we started our own printing works, my father used to, in those days we didn't have our own linotype machine, he used to go and pick up the linotype and he became involved, and it was a great interest to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you become involved in different causes. For instance, there was no ambulance station, so I assisted with that. I used to do the publicity, and I was secretary of their fundraising committee, and there was no swimming pool, and I was secretary of that fundraising campaign,
and this then there was in the 50s.
Yes, and then there was no hospital, and you know, we started a public campaign for a hospital, and I was elected to the board in 1957. That was a board without a hospital. So, and I was secretary to the board, honorary secretary, for 11 years until the hospital was built and the first paid secretary took over. And
your work was voluntary work, was it?
Oh, yes. And I remarried in 1963, and that was a very good marriage. My husband was a widower with five children, so that was an amalgamation. Together we had eight.
Yeah.
But he was a shire councillor and a businessman, and that was a really good relationship. He was killed in an accident in 1980.
Oh.
And Blacktown established, it always had more development taking place. It held that record for many years. We had the electrification come to Lala Park in 1956, and that opened up that area, made a big difference to the town, improved train services. Radically altered the town, because the town was just Sleepy Hollow until then, as we got more people. For instance, we got the first, in 1959, we got the first one-stop shopping centre in Blacktown. That was the first Westfield shopping centre to be established, and that was established in Blacktown. The founders of Westfield, Frank Lowry and John Saunders, they had a coffee shop in Blacktown. They opened up, and they were also a real estate agency, and then they could see the potential, and they developed this. That was the forerunner of all the Westfield shopping centres.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, and they still remember. They still remember Blacktown, you know.
So that changed from what you call Sleepy Hollow to what it is
Sleepy
today.
Hollow. Well, I mean, the town used to close for lunch, you know, and there were very, you know, leftovers from the past. Roads substantially improved. Well, instead of the pothole, fill a pothole strategy, you know, they had to think about building the service roads to take the new development.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a radical upheaval, actually, and you had to change from the old thinking, you know, of the make-do. And industry started to come to Blacktown. You had the industrial areas that were started. Instead of being more or less a dormitory suburb, you had, instead of having one central school, you had, I think it was about 10 perimeter schools established. I mean, Blacktown Central was the original school. Well, Blacktown Central I don't think there's a school there at all now. I think it's schools, or the perimeter schools, have taken the population load.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got very substantial private development around the town. And
prior to that time, there was very little industry in Blacktown, wasn't there, apart from the poultry farms and...
Oh, well, I mean, it was largely a rural community, yes. Actually.
Mm-hmm.
And you really didn't have any established industrial areas at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the big housing development of Mount Druitt was established. Well, you see, that still is, to a degree, a dormitory suburb. They still haven't got sufficient industry to employ the people who live there.
They have to travel out to other suburbs.
Well, I mean to say, they made a big mistake in... I mean, Margaret Mead, you know, the anthropologist, I remember her coming and being interviewed, and she said it was all wrong, actually, because they lumped all those people that had those particular problems, you know, the invalid pensioners, the single mums, and people with all other sorts of problems, and they just sort of lumped them all in
together.
That area, and they expected it to gel. I mean, there's some very good people living in some of those areas, but you've got streets out there with all invalid pensioners, all, you know, single mums and all the rest. Well, it generates problems.
Yes, and they're not much support for each other.
No, well, I mean to say, this is it, and they had really no support services at all. Actually, Alan Whittam, the Anglican minister, who was the pioneer Anglican minister there in that new housing development, he was more or less financial advisor, spiritual advisor, handyman.
Everything
to those people. And it was an unreal kind of load.
And so when you worked at the newspaper, I suppose that was very unusual for a woman to be editor of a copy paper.
It was very unusual, but I found that my practice was, I didn't believe actually that you should expect any favours, that you should stand on your own merits, and just because you're a female, I'm not a militant feminist, but I believe that if you're going to get cooperation or if you're going to get respect, you earn it.
Mm-hmm. You found that you were well accepted?
I found that I was well accepted, and I just didn't expect any favours.
Mm.
And generally I found that, that men generally were very easy to work with, as long as I, you know, they more or less treated me as an equal,
mm-hmm.
which is what should happen.
Yes.
But I just didn't ask for any favours.
Mm-hmm.
I found it, the first time I had to do it, and, you know, went into purely male society, I was a bit nervous, but I mean, I did it so often, I was used to being the only female amongst male groups, didn't worry me.
You got used to it.
Oh, yes.
Quickly.
Mm.
And I suppose you found that quite an exciting time.
Well, it was exciting because there was always something happening,
mm-hmm.
and there was always some challenge.
And did you belong to many community organisations? I don't suppose you had very much time.
Well, I mean, from 1956, as I said, I was publicly elected to the hospital board, and we didn't have a hospital, so that was the cause. Right. And, you know, we had many deputations to the Minister for Health, and that was quite an exciting campaign. And we
were
had Mr. Sheehan. Oh, yes.
In the fundraising and
Yes, well, I mean, I started a number of auxiliaries. We we organised a number of auxiliaries to start raising money for the hospital, and then we... my husband was in Lyons, and... oh, excuse me, I've got the water on in a couple of places.